Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody to the Angie Bowie Barnett and Rick Hunt radio show. Our guest today is Rick. Who is it?
It is DJ Tennessee. Yay!
Yay!
Hey, welcome. Everybody. Hey, Angie.
Welcome,
hey, Rick. How you doing?
Hey. Welcome.
Oh, Tennessee. It's so good to have you on the show. Let me just say quickly, thank you, Chick Cashman. Every time I play Dance, Dance, Dance at the beginning of the show, I think of you. DJ Chick Cashman was on the show, and he was a pal of mine out of Arizona. He's a wonderful lead guitarist, and he produced this track. So kudos to Chick Cashman. And I'm going to do my introduction to DJ Tennessee, one of the best and brightest DJs New York has to offer. Voiceover artist, remix artist, host of Tennevision, most wonderful cable show out of New York. 17 years it's been on the air. Paved the way for many young DJs. Toured the U.S., Europe, Canada. A year residency DJ in Marbella. He was also in Ibiza. DJ Tennessee is just the most wonderful man. I adore him. And over 20 years we've been friends. All I can say is, Tennessee, it's not a moment too soon to have you on the show. I'm so thrilled you're here today.
Likewise. I mean, Angie, I've been a friend and a fan for many, many years, and it's an honor. And I'm just glad that we all lived long enough to see all this Jetsons of high pedigree where we could all be on the radio and on our computer, you know?
Yeah, isn't that the truth? Now, tell us about can we start at the beginning, Tennessee? I'm thinking about the first time I got a chance to hang with you. I mean, this was in Atlanta, right? Did we meet in Atlanta or did we meet in New York?
Yes, it was in Atlanta, and Sherman had just marched through the town. back in the mid-1800s there, yeah. Sherman had just marched through Atlanta, and we were running for our lives. Yes, Angie.
Followed by Mr. Peabody.
God.
You had a dinner party, and Dick and David, I came over to the house with them. We had a dinner party, and we sat down. And then sometime later, right around the time of the 96 Olympics, we sat there at Dick and David's house and sat there and talked until the sun came up and just about everything under the sun. And Angie, I was a little boy with 10 years old reading Circus and Rock Scene magazine and looking at photographs of you and just dreaming of, a life beyond you know, working on the farm and in the fields, and just meeting you, I came full circle. It was great, you know, and I've been so blessed to count you as a friend ever since.
Oh, you spin a good yarn. Oh, you are good. I love that TJ there. Listen to him go. Oh, sweetie, this is so great. It was. You're right. I mean, I remember all of that, but I kept thinking to myself, now, did we actually meet in New York first? You know, but you're right. It was in Atlanta.
It was in Atlanta. And, you know, we've had a moment. You know, it's funny because I remember when you were here in 2000 and we went to see that what was that rock and roll movie with the kid that was a 15-year-old journalist for Rolling Stone and Kate Hudson was in it. It was a bit of a revisionist mess. But what was the name of that?
Yes.
I cannot remember the name of that movie. You know?
I can't either, but it was kind of cute, and that girl sure was cute.
Yeah, she was. Well, she was Goldie Hawn's daughter, so, you know, how can
that's
you
do right. Okay, yeah. Okay. That's I kept thinking to myself that smile, and I could see Goldie Hawn, but I thought to myself, well, it certainly wasn't Goldie. Yes, you know, sure, talk about Sherman.
You're right. I know I'm sure anyone under the age of 30 are going, who the hell are these people they're talking about? You know,
well,
with young people now,
it doesn't really matter because we know who they are.
I know, you know, give them some homework and something to look up. Yeah, I know,
yes,
but it's
exactly.
Weird, you know, the 20-somethings, man, if it happened before 2005, you're good luck, you know. It's weird how we're moving along in the 20s. And I was just talking to a friend the other day. It's fascinating. Speaking of the 1800s, I mean, people in our age group, we actually knew people from the 1800s. I mean, I knew people from the 1800s who were born in the 1800s, you know. So,
right.
And it's, Yeah. So, that's just becoming – and it's strange this year how as we're going further along, you know, how things become – what was it George Orwell said? He who controls the past controls the future.
Yes, I suppose,
yeah.
Because the interpreters and the analysts are the ones who decide upon what will be apple-picked out of history.
Right, yes. I mean, you know,
I've been having a very deep morning, you guys. Don't say anything to me that gets me to start talking because
All right.
All right,
yeah.
It's not a good idea. Okay, Tennessee, back to you.
Favorite food and favorite soda. Okay, keep going for a second. What's your favorite cooler?
Now, what's going on in New York, Tennessee? Come on, fill us in. Tell us what's been happening this summer.
Well, this summer was really a bizarro ride, man. I was on the road for a while, and I got back here in beginning of May. And, Angie, I was really lucky. Back in the winter, I had DJed a birthday party, an 82nd birthday party for this lady named Lindell Cohen. And she ran this fabulous boutique on 72nd Street that had been there for 50 years called Off-Broadway Boutique. And Lynn was also a bit of a public access hack producer, like a show for years called Positively Lynn.
Uh-huh.
That was so wonderful. And she had appeared in this documentary called Advanced Style, and that thing had blew up because it's just such a great documentary. And so this guy, Ari Seth Cohen, runs this blog, and he just goes around the city and takes pictures of women, you know, over 50, 60, 70, 80. There's even a woman in the movie that's like 93 years old. And he gets all these five or six ladies together from a different walks of life and different various socioeconomic, you know, backgrounds. And they look amazing, you know. They dress like, you know, Joan Collins, and, you know, they look amazing. And
I saw
the movie
this
was
article. It was fabulous.
Yes, and the movie was just great. I mean, it was like Paris is Burning meets Harold and
Maude.
I
didn't
know
there was a movie of it.
Yes, it's on Netflix. You can watch it on Netflix, and it was playing all the festivals, and it played a lot of the art houses here last fall, and it was an instant hit. It's like Paris is Burning meets Harold and Maude.
Right.
And everybody
right.
loved it. And so Lynn was getting all these media requests, you know, as she was on Meredith Vieira and Ricky Lake and Today and Fox 5 Good Morning and all these different shows. And she's like, my darling, I'm 82 years old. I can barely use my phone. You've got to help me. And I was like, okay. So I went to work for her. And at the store, you know, I was managing the social media and everything. And Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all that to sell the store. And I started, doing the emails and responding to her media requests. And things were just going great guns. I mean, she found out that I'm also certified as a home health aide. So I began taking care of her husband, who was like 90 and in a wheelchair and on oxygen, but barely see, but still pretty sharp. And they were like my favorite new two people. They were like Edith and Archie, you know. They were like a real New York couple. And I was just having the greatest time. And a friend of mine had done a life-size portrait of Lynn, and we were going to unveil that. And over Memorial Day weekend, she left the house there while I was looking after her husband, and she went to work, and she went to a flea market. She got really kind of a bit ill and got dizzy, and she fell and busted her head and was dead 9 days later.
Oh, gee.
And it was just such a shock, man. I mean, it just reminds you that this is just, these bodies are just mud and sticks and water, man, and it can be over at any second. So carpe diem, my friend, and seize the day. And always make sure you're doing exactly what you want to do and where you want to do it. And I continued to take care of her husband, and he lived about another month. Lynn and Sandy were a package deal because they had been together for 62 years, and he just couldn't keep going. And unfortunately, when she died, the day her children were getting ready to have her service, the landlord hit him up with a $7,000 rent increase. And so the store actually finally closed here in late August. It wasn't really quite the same without Lynn there, because Lynn would hold court there in the front of the store, and she was so great. And on the side of the wall there was everybody from Cher to Liz Taylor to Diane Carroll to every woman that's ever walked across the stage in a sparkly gown had went in there and talked to Lynn. And the first day at the job, I met Cicely Tyson. And, you know, I saw her in the store. And, you know, I don't like to say nothing to anybody. I don't just let people be and let people do their thing. But Lynn was insistent, and she introduced me to Cicely Tyson. And oddly enough, I saw Cicely on the street there on 72nd a week later, and I was the one to tell her that Lynn had passed. And it was just so bizarro. It was just like some bizarro dream. You know, you're walking down the street, and you have to tell Cicely Tyson that one of her dearest friends is gone. And it was really strange, you know. And then It was so bizarre. And we had some incidents here in Harlem where there's a couple of, I was doing my laundry, and there was a drive-by shooting, and I had to duck during the rinse cycle. I had to get down under the washing machine and scared for my life right between the wash and spin cycle.
Wow.
And, you know, I just got all these reminders. I got all these reminders all summer long. Man, this can be over in any second. Seize the moment. Seize the day. Tell everybody in your life that you love them, how much they mean to you, and just try to get as much done as you can get done while you can. You know, don't waste a second. Don't waste a second.
May I share a quick anecdote?
Of course, yes. Be funny and share.
Speaking of the elders, I had a friend. Her name was Ruby, and she was 103 years old. And I went to her 103rd birthday party, and she knew me since I was a kid. And so I brought her one of my drawings as a gift, and she just loved it. And we got to talking, and there was all kinds of people there. And she says, I have a tattoo. And I said, you do? And she says, do you want to see it? And I said, well, I don't know. So she lifted up her dress, and there on her inner thigh was this smudged Cupid doll that she must have got, like, in the 20s or 30s. And it was just fabulous. And I looked at her. I said, gee, Ruby, I don't think I'll be sleeping at all tonight.
Wow. And that was scandalous. I mean, tattoos were still kind of scandalous in the 70s and the 80s. I'm sure it was, unheard of in the 20s, man.
Yeah, back then.
That must have been
during
World War One, you know. Gosh, that's amazing, amazing.
That's wild.
Angie, I did get to Lady Miss Keir called me and asked me to go see Boy George and Culture Club with her and these two other queens. This queen from Boston, Eileen Dover, she's a really funny drag performer, and Judge, she hooked us up, and we went there. And we actually went to see them in Newark, at the beautiful downtown Newark, at the Performing Arts Center there. And it's great because, you know, I had met George a couple of times. I'd actually DJed with him one night at Spa. But I got to meet all of the band, and I'm a huge fan of Mikey Craig, the bass player in
right.
the band. I think Do You Really Want to Hurt Me is one of the most brilliant reggae bass lines ever. And apparently Mikey had also put out a whole album of Culture Club songs that were just done dub reggae style, which I am such a huge dub head. I love that. And it was just a great time, you know. It was just it was just great too. So that was one of the great highlights. And then my friend Sean, he goes out to the he goes all the way out to Reese Beach, which is all the way out there in Rockaway Park near out past JFK Airport, and it's like about a 2-hour schlep on the train. But when you get out there, it's so wonderful. And Angie, it's a beach where it's like, you know, a kind of the circus of the stars, like everybody, you know, and a lot of trans women go there to the beach. And behind it is a boarded up, a bricked up old mental institution with the windows broken out. So it's perfect, like Adam's Family Day at the beach. It's perfect.
Oh, how lovely. I love that already.
And there's an older queen that's been lived on the streets for years, named La Colombiana, who's always, like, you know, working these looks that he's found on the street or found on the side of the road, and he's just so funny and wonderful. You know, he's another one that just reminds you, man, laugh more, you live and laugh and have fun and enjoy it, because it could be over at any moment, you know. And then my friend Juan and I went to Coney Island several times this summer, and that's always magical because that's like the poor man's French Riviera, you know. It's just great.
I love Coney Island. I do too.
It has such a great energy about it, and it's such a great history.
Yeah.
And so the summer wasn't a complete wash, but man, it was just such a ride this summer. It was just such a roller coaster ride. And New York City, I mean, I've lived in a lot of places, but it is the most intense place that I've ever lived. I mean, it's just, we live so close to the flame here, man, and the candle burns twice as fast. So you got to enjoy it.
Yeah.
It was still a great summer, and I've kind of bumped up my skills here and got some new skills under my belt, and I'm going now and turning all of my old camera tapes and VHS tapes into MP4 files and joining the whole digital age. I have a few videos on YouTube, but I'm going to put a lot more on there. And my friends always say before there was YouTube, there was Tinnivision, so I got to get cracking here and get everything loaded and show
well,
the world.
Well,
you know.
And I have something I need to talk to you about, too. When I was doing the research, I came across something that you said, which is something Rick and I were talking about. And so I'll send you an email afterwards. But
okay.
It was a great, pleasant surprise to see that it was something you were interested in. But moving on, can we go back? I mean, let's go back a little. I don't think folks understand that much about how the whole concept of what has happened with transgender and trans entertainers, how it kind of came about through Atlanta, through RuPaul, through Funtone,
yes,
through Lady Keir, how it came up and manifested with Lady Bunny at Wigstock, how it internationalized and spread out like this beautiful, great, welcoming embrace. I don't think a lot of people take the time to talk about that. Would you mind talking a little bit to those subjects, Tennessee?
Not at all. I mean, it's something that I can say that's part of my legacy as an artist as well. I mean, I'm not a trans person or I'm not a drag queen entertainer, but I've certainly, you know, provided.
You are an entertainer.
I am an entertainer, but I'm featured in male clothing, but
trans. I meant you're entertainer.
I know, but you know, you,
yeah,
like you say, you have to break it down for the audience. But yes, you know, I mean, well, first of all, I mean, you know, a drag has been a device that was even Shakespearean. I mean, you know, the female actors during
much
the Shakespearean
before
era
then,
were not even.
The Italians used it all the time before. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, baby.
And we go through cycles. I mean, like, you know, in the 70s, we had Sylvester and Divine and Jim Bailey and people like that. And then, you know, the dark ages of the 1980s came and all of that kind of got buried a little bit, you know. And I think that, well, what it did, you know, and when you put something in the underground, it only bubbles up and makes it stronger. And I believe, you know, that entire – Atlanta was such a fertile ground for an artist of any genre during that time, because it was just there was a little bit more of the urban flight, I think, there in the early 80s, and Atlanta was wide open, and the artists, they just, you know, they went full on, and New York City was the same. And I think that with I know with RuPaul and the other entertainers there, they, you know, I think they felt like they had done everything they could possibly do there in Atlanta, and they sent out to conquer New York, and it was only a matter of time before the media people got involved. Rue was very lucky to have, you know, World of Wonder, Randy and Fenton behind him, who are just, you know, genius. They're just a whiz at getting things done. And the Wigstock Festival, I mean, you know, it was started so people, you know, the Ukrainian senior citizens who lived across the street from the pyramid could see what all these queens were up to at night when they were in bed. And it's, you know, it kind of had the best elements of the Woodstock festival in 69. And, you know, and the summer of 89 was really the summer of love. It really was. The summer of 89 and the summer of 90, those were the two summers of love. And because there was such a people were beginning to embrace different ideas, and America was becoming fed up with the current political climate and wanted a change. And it was just, you know, like they say, something's blowing in the wind, man. Something's in the air, you know. Call out the instigators because there's something in the air. And,
that's right.
You know, it's just, you know, and in the early 70s, like, we had Flip Wilson. And it's so funny, back then, no one even batted an eye or even thought anything. And I even remember as a child, you could buy these dolls that were Flip Wilson on one side, and then you flipped it over, and it was Geraldine, you know, Geraldine Jones on the other side, and it was a little cloth doll you could pull a string. No one, people gave that to kids, and no one thought a thing, man. No one even thought it, you know. It was just like I was laughing with Randy Jones of the Village People. It took, you know, America like 3 or 4 years to finally figure out what the gifts of the Village People were, you know, before they couldn't find it. It was like, wait, what's up with these guys, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, and I just think it's great. It just allows this suspension of disbelief, and it always says, you know what, don't take yourself too seriously. Don't take any of this crap too seriously. Just have fun. Just be able to laugh at yourself and have a good time. And Rue's created an empire, and I'm really happy for him. And he's gave a lot of young entertainers a shot at doing something that before just what did not exist, you know. And, you know, I just think it's great. It fosters a lot of understanding. One of the great things, I think, is that it reminded, you know, a lot of women in this country that, hey, you know, you can be a drag queen, too. You know, you don't have to be giving me acid-washed suburban poodle perm glamour. You can actually bump it up another level and be, you know, the goddess that you are. So. I think it helped women in this country to get in touch with the goddess within. So that was great. That was one of the great things about that.
Oh,
and,
can I quote you on that? Oh, yeah. Tennessee allowed them to get in touch with
that goddess. Yes, please. You know, keep this thing on. That's how I say the eminently quotable DJ Tennessee.
Yes,
please keep this
right,
thing on.
That's right, my sweet.
Did I cover the subject? Is next question, or do I need to further elaborate? I think, you know,
I just noticed I was brought to Atlanta to open the Gay Center. And there was a poetry festival, and I write poetry. So a guy called Jimmy Lovell, who had already entertained us in Springfield, Ohio, who was a rock and roll manager, he got to Atlanta. I guess he was working. He had some federal job, and they had transferred him to Atlanta. And so he was a very politically active gay man. And he invited me to host a show to welcome the Gay Center and to officiate for the opening. And there were like 25 acts. And so I got a you know, dinner jacket, and drag kinged it through the entire, you know, 2.5-3 hour show. And it was in a big, beautiful dinner club.
Yes, I love that. I love that. I, you know, I encourage women, you know, to dress up like Elvis Presley and Prince and, you know, Little Richard and explore both. I, you know, it gets, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. So, yes, absolutely. And, you know,
well,
I want to say, you know.
One has to.
Yes.
I mean, the whole thing about gender is that it's questionable at best.
Yes, and
it's,
I know you've explored that you've explored that in books and in essays before, Angie, and you wrote so brilliantly on that subject. So, yes, thank you. And I just want to remind, you know, women, I mean, some of the biggest drag queens are, you know, Tina Turner, Dolly Parton, Lady Miss Keir, Cher, you know, those are, you know, because, I mean, those women don't sit around making breakfast looking like that. I mean, you know, you have, that takes a, you know, Dolly Parton's right, man. It costs a lot of money to look this cheap, you know. So it's available for everybody. It's available for, you know, and we all wear drag of a sort. I mean, you know, even Clint Eastwood and Arnold Schwarzenegger, they sit in a makeup chair and they come out in, you know, Dirty Harry Terminator drag. So we've all got drag of a sort on, you know. It's not just something.
Well, it's all about style, isn't it? Because style is,
yeah,
the ability to take a costume and make it come alive and electric with you in it. And so, it's
well,
a styling type of thing.
And that goes back to where for me, it goes back to where we were before with, you know, Lindell Cohen and Advanced Style. And, you know, she was like, style is what fashion is. Fashion comes and goes. Style is forever, you know. Because, I mean, we've all seen
people
that have
got. Oh, that's another great one. That's absolutely true. Yes.
Yes. You know, fashion comes and goes. Hemlines, necklines, you know, hairlines, they come and go. But style is forever. You get. Because, I mean, we've all seen people that have got money to buy labels, but they just don't have good style, or they're not, you know. Like, you know, it's so funny to sit and listen to Lindell. Like, it didn't matter who it was coming in there, whether it was, you know, whether it was any of a pop entertainer or some from an A-list celebrity to the girl on the Brooklyn Z train, you know, she would say,
right.
She would just tell them, it's like, oh, my darling, you can't wear stripes. You're far too short. No, it's not working, you know. So it's all about finding out what works for you and what makes you look good and what helps you. Because beauty gives strength, and then strength gives life. That's what you have to remember.
Yes, I like that. That's another good one.
Yeah.
You're full of them today, darling.
I am, you know, and at 12 noon, because, you know, my 12 noon is like most people's 3 a.m., so, yeah, I'm really on point. Thank you, Cafe Bustelo, you know. We got to have our New York Spanish style coffee here.
Tennessee something.
Excuse me. So what I'm hearing, Tennessee, is you were taking care of some elders, sounds like.
Yes, you know, and I, like I said before, Dolly Parton's right. It costs a lot of money to look this cheap. So one of my side gigs when I'm not DJing or whatever it is I'm doing is that I wanted to get myself certified in something, you know. I had just been like this, you know, rock and roller, you know, party clown for 30 years. And I was like, you know what, I need to have some kind of a skill under my belt. So I went to home health aid school there in Sunnyside, Queens with, you know, Shamika, Tamika, and, you know, and Jones. And got myself certified as a home health aide. And it was, I mean, it was quite a... It's been an amazing experience while I've been doing it. I mean, Lindell's husband, he was the first client I had that you know, had died. And thankfully, it wasn't on my watch when he passed. I mean, I could have got him through it because I've helped people cross over before in my life, but I was just thankful that that wasn't me. But one of my greatest clients was an elderly Jamaican man who lived up there way, way up in the Bronx on Gun Hill Road. And he had been blinded by a stroke about 2 years prior, and I came to look after him. And I got in there and got to putzing around, and I found this massive stack of old reggae 45s, you know, with the song on the A side and the instrumental, what they refer to as the version on the B side. And I Windexed the shit out of all of them and took them home and burned them onto a CD and then made a DJ mix of it. And you can actually listen to that on my Mixcloud page. And And I went back and I played it for him, and he was just, he almost had tears in his eyes. Like, long time and I'll hear them record, Mr. Kevin. And a long time and I'll hear them record. And he was just, he was so happy about that. And so, you know, and it also goes into my theory about when you start out doing something, you never know where it's going to take you, and you never know what it's going to be. I mean, I went over there to, you know, cook his meals and take his blood pressure and ended up getting a crash course in dub reggae and in classic roots rock reggae that I wasn't, you know, I know some of it, but there was a lot that I got schooled on there. So, you know, you never know what anything's going to be. You never know what anything's going to be, man. You never know where anything's going to lead. So I was just really blessed and thankful for that. You know, I had some clients that were like, you know, I had a few clients that were kind of like Precious and her mom, and I had to run out of there. But, I mean, you know, it's just that out, even that was a learning experience. I mean, I can even put that in my stand-up act and have a laugh about that. So, but, yeah, it's a very rewarding job. Unfortunately, it's not the most, you know, the most well-paid job, but I like to feel that I got a skill under my belt and I'm certified in that. And, you know, just being a Southerner, having good manners, hospitality, it just kind of like a second nature. So, you know.
Well, you're doing something important.
Yeah, you know.
Yes, you are doing something important.
And, you know, I got to a point here in New York City where, unfortunately, a lot of the DJ gigs I was getting, or a lot of the young, you know, early, the kids in their 20s, they've come up in a different way than we did, and they're really not – a lot of them are not interested in the underground. They want to hear Taylor Swift and Rihanna, and, I mean, you know, and I'm not one of those DJ snobs that won't play anything on the radio, but at the same time, man, I'm not a jukebox, and I really want to push the envelope of the underground to the mainstream, and that wasn't happening a lot, so that was caused, that was one of the things that had caused me to say, look around and say, look, I need to try to supplement my income, do something else. And it, you know, what's really funny is one of my, I was in that phase of like one of my heroes, or like David Lee Roth around 2000. Nothing was happening for him, you know, and the Van Halens had re-signed with Warner and kind of screwed him on the royalty deal. And so he just quit the business and started driving an ambulance in the South Bronx, got his license as a paramedic, and started driving an ambulance in the South Bronx. And listening to him talk about it, I found out that it was some of the same motivations I had. I mean, guys, how many times have you ever drove past a building, a large, large building, and you look and you go, I wonder what's in there? So being a home health aide allowed me to go in there and look and find out what was in there, you know. So it was rewarding in that way, too. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I did not know that.
I think he had to give there was a black lady that he saved her life and gave her CPR. But, I mean, you know, and here's the thing. I mean, the hit parade fades so fast. A couple of summers, and you're lucky if people can, some people will remember you. But the mainstream, you know, you kind of have to hit them over the head with a Pepsi can or they don't really know who you are. And so it allowed him a little bit of anonymity, I guess, which he'd probably not had in a long time. I just was like, wow, what a parallel. Someone I admire decided to do the same thing. Just go look after people, you know, just look after the elderly. And there's so many stories and so many things you can learn, you know, if you just sit and listen, you know. And then, you know, they ask you questions, you ask them questions. I think that's one of the problems in this country is there needs to be a little bit more of there's a bit of a disconnect between the elderly and the young. If we could get those two groups who are kind of at risk in our current climate and get them together, man, I think it would create something really wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Do you write at all, Tennessee?
I do. I'm actually working on my first stand-up act. My friends have been kicking me in the behind for years and getting – Tennessee, you're a great DJ, but get your ass on stage and do stand-up because you know how to talk and you're funny. Da, da, da. So, yes, and I'm actually working on my autobiography. A friend in Tel Aviv calls me, and we record once in the evening or once in the morning because they're 7 hours ahead over there. And I just got to get this finished because, it's funny. I'm in the process of going on the road. I'm actually going to be down in your area, Angie, and we had spoke about that. And
uh-huh.
Talking to young people, you know, they've toured, you know, Joni Mitchell says they've paved paradise and put up a parking lot here. So a lot of young kids have no idea what even went on in the 90s here, in the 80s and the 90s in Manhattan. I think it's a really important story to tell. It is, and you know, and when this like that crappy Stonewall movie came out, which was like complete revisionist mess, and Marsha P. Johnson is not even mentioned. I mean, you know, I mean that's like making a movie about the Ten Commandments and there's no Moses, man. Come on, come on, what? Come on, what? You know. You know,
let's
the part of Moses will be played by Agnes Moorehead. I mean, you know, it's like, what? 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 So I think it's really important that we, I mean, we can you know, kvetch and complain about our history, or we can, you know, say it's, you know, grab the bull by the horns and seize the day and tell our stories ourselves, man.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I
that's
am the
exactly
luckiest,
right.
I just feel like the luckiest guy. I'm such a Forrest Gump because I'm just this ding-a-ling who is actually, you know, stumbled into some of the most historic events in the last, like, 30, 40 years here in America, and I'm forever blessed and thankful for that.
Well, that's true, but let's take you back. I have been to Ibiza, and I loved it so much. Tell me how much fun you had in Ibiza.
Well, I would like to, Angie, but I unfortunately haven't been yet. I've only been to Marbella.
I thought you'd been to Ibiza. It said Ibiza on your thing. I've been to Marbella, but only, I think I was only there 2 days.
I haven't. I did a year in Marbella, and I went all up and down the coast there of Spain, in Barcelona and Sevilla and Torremolinos and Fuengirola.
Right.
And, it's just great. I mean, I'm assuming you've been there as well, and I have not been to Ibiza, and I really, that's a crying shame. That's one of my bucket lists and my top three of places where I really want to go and investigate, not just for the DJ scene, but just to see this tiny little island of merriment and fun, you know?
They had the most amazing club there called the Coup Club, and I went with the band and Chico to play there. And you got to stay there for a week and then do, you know, a couple of shows on Friday and Saturday night. And it was amazing. So I was thinking that you had gotten to go there and DJ. Sorry, that's why I was asking you.
Fine. And there could be, you know, I mean, you know, it's funny. It's like you were saying a lot of the stuff, you know, as Abraham Lincoln always said, the problem with internet quotes is you can never know if they're true or not. it's funny.
You
know what?
Silly.
Can we talk about the Mick Jagger poster? Is that what you want? The picture that you posted this morning? Because I had a really funny Mick Jagger story that had happened here.
I'm dying to hear it. I was going to ask you about that because I wrote it down when you said it to me on the phone.
Yeah. Well, you know, on Facebook where it has, you know, share your memories or, you know, 2 years ago today, 3 years ago today. And during Yom Kippur, I noticed that, you know, 5 years ago today, it was like a Friday night, and it was Yom Kippur, and I had been to see a friend over on 72nd, and I was just walking home, and it was dead quiet out, nobody out, and right across the street there from the Dakota building where Roberta Flack and Yoko Ono live there is Strawberry Fields. And I thought, well, you know, I've got some time to kill. I need to make some phone calls. I'm going to go in here and sit down in the park. So I went in, Strawberry Fields, you know, and it's very tree-covered, so it's kind of dark. And it was just at dusk, just as the sun was going down. And I went in there, and I sat down, and there was a gentleman sitting across, you know, maybe like 5-6 feet away from me. And I kept, you know, fiddling around. I had a cigarette, playing with my phone, and I kept looking over, and I'm going, okay, is that Mick Jagger? And then I'm like, Tennessee, come on. What would Mick Jagger be doing sitting in Central Park on Yom Kippur, dead silence on a Friday night with nobody in here? And he was sitting there with his legs crossed and, like, his back arched like an old British schoolmarm. And it was so funny. And I kept looking and going, okay, is that Mick Jagger? Is that really Mick Jagger? Because I couldn't really see because it was maybe, like, 5-6 feet back. And it was kind of dark in there. And so I finished my business and I left. And then my friend Yoli called me and she said, oh, my God, I saw Mick Jagger on the Upper West Side tonight. I was like, wait a minute, what was he wearing? And she described perfectly to the T what he was wearing. I was like, oh, man, that was Mick Jagger. And I, you know, I didn't say anything to him because I didn't want to walk up and say, oh, hi, are you Mick Jagger? You know, it's not like something you want to walk up and say to someone. But it was just so, and he was sitting there smiling, and he kept looking at me, and it was very, you know, pleased to meet you. Hope you guessed my name. You know, it was very bad.
Yeah.
It was really kind of witchy and creepy, and I'm like, okay, that is not mixed. But it was. It was. So it just goes to show you, man, New York is a magical, magical place where you never know from 9 to 5, man. You never really know what's going to happen in this town.
That's true. Well, now tell me, Tennessee, what about as you've been reviewing the television inventory of shows, tell us what you've come across that has gotten you really excited that you're going to be thrilled to put up on YouTube.
Well, the fact that I was able to get a lot of good guests. Some of the guests I got.
I know.
Tell us some. Well, I had Alternate, and I had DJ Dimitri from Paris, not the Delight DJ, but DJ Dimitri from Paris,
right,
that did the very stylish girl. And I had Armand Van Helden, and I've had Lady Miss Keir and RuPaul, and sometimes I would do Man
this
on the Street.
This is an amazing guest list, darling.
Yeah, I mean, I've just been so blessed. I've been so lucky. And, I mean, some people, I would have them, and I would just, you know, show, like, a live performance or something from them and maybe just get a two-second chat. A lot of the disco ladies, Tana Gardner I had on. I got to talk to her that sang Heartbeat and Work That Body. And,
right.
Let's see, who else? Oh, and Peter Benjaminson, who was a writer for the Detroit Free Press and wrote this amazing book about Florence Ballard of the Supremes. And
right.
Got to have him on there and talk about that. And, you know, sometimes I'm reviewing and I'm noticing that I'm doing these man on the street segments, and it's just such a piece of history of New York. So, and, you know, I was just kind of putzing along. I started Tennevision because I just was watching MTV, and I was like, man, there's nothing on here. And this was in the 90s when MTV was beginning to switch to the real world and all of these reality shows and showing less and less music programming every day. And I was like, there's just nothing. And then, you know, I was so blessed to have been the Dancing Genie in Grooves in the Heart music video. And then, and I thought, well, maybe MTV's going to, you know, try to pick up the ball on this and run with it. And I even went there and pitched them some ideas, and they were looking at me like I was from Mars coughing SARS, and they were not. Those 20-year-olds just were not getting it. And what it was just way, way ahead of its time, as a lot of us Aquarians, we do things, and it takes people 15, 20 years for it to sink in. Also, it's just each show is its own little time capsule, and I was literally putting those things together by the seat of my pants with two VCRs and a pause button, and they came out all right. Some of them I'm going to maybe take the footage and try to bump it up a little bit. But just was, you know, it reminds me, sometimes it takes a long time in America, man. Sometimes it takes it usually does. It takes a long, long time here. So it's maybe before people figure out what you're doing. I mean, Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz have been dead for 20, 30 years, and America's just really beginning to see how brilliant they were and how they basically invented television. So, you know, it takes a while. One of the great things that I saw in my footage was that I had, when Matthew Shepard was murdered, there was a really impromptu protest in March, and there was just tons and tons of people hit the streets without permits or, you know, where it's not this official type thing. And the police were just, this was during the time of Giuliani, and the police were just freaking out, following us on horses and motor scooters and everything. But, so I was lucky to have gotten, you know, filmed that and a lot of other events, you know, just like filming things at Wigstock or filming,
I'm excited
so many
hearing
shows,
you talk
know?
About it. I hope you're going to, you can recover all that film, you know, you've got to cut it.
Oh, yes, it will. You know, it's here on VHS, and then I have a backup, where the master product I put on a Hi-8, so I'm going to try to work with the Hi-8 and maybe reassemble some of the shows, but I feel very, very blessed, and everybody that's always watched and supported. I never know who's watching the thing, and I'll get so down on myself. I'll be dadgum, nobody's watching this crap. I'm schlepping around out here with a tape at 2 o'clock in the morning, da da da. And then I'll see somebody at the grocery store who'll say, "Hey, aren't you that kid from TV?" I'm like, "Oh, okay, yeah, guilty as charged. That is me." So, it gives you the strength to keep going, you know.
Well, I want to say congratulations, because I know what it takes to do something for a long period of time, to get an inventory like that, to keep your strength and your artistic integrity, and to know that it's going to be worth it in the end. And that is because you're a true artist, Tennessee. You know it.
Thank you, Andy.
Rick knows it.
Well, real recognizes real. What can I say? You know, what can I say?
No,
real,
but it's true, isn't it, Rick? I mean, you don't schlep around doing that unless you're absolutely committed
It's funny, just like I said before, there was a period in my life from 2005 until 2008 where I worked for Technicolor, the film people, you know, color by Technicolor.
Right.
And I was a receptionist there in client services, and my job was to, you know, make sure that Marty Scorsese and his posse have a car today at 5 o'clock, pour Woody Allen some coffee, get Meryl Streep a donut, whatever is needed to be done there. And my first first couple of days on the job, Ang Lee was there, color correcting Brokeback Mountain, and they weren't even calling it that. They were calling it Del Mar after the character's name of Ennis Del Mar, after Heath Ledger's character, because they were still trying to get the funding in place and they didn't want to freak people out. And I had, you know,
right.
I would just go in there and pop in and give them coffee, and I had really no idea what the subject matter was, and I went and looked it up. And it's strange, and I'm looking at Ang Lee, and I'm thinking, he won an Oscar for Crouching Tiger. You know, he kind of bombed when he went Hollywood and made the Hulk film, and he's made been a bit uneven. And I'm thinking, you know, every few years he'll get some French bankers to give him some money to make another film, and it'll be an art house thing. And then, bam, next thing you know, cultural zeitgeist, biggest film of the year, nominated for an Oscar. So once again, when you start out doing something, you have no idea where it's going to be or how much people are going to like it. So you never know, man. You never know.
Isn't that the truth?
That's true.
You know, and as a DJ, you like to think that you have a bit of a barometer of what people's tastes are, but sometimes you can't tell. People will like things that you had no idea. You thought, oh, no, that's probably not going to fly. But, yeah, you never have the public's taste will surprise you. I mean, obviously.
Yeah.
I'm hoping.
Yeah, no, that's
true. I love the idea of YouTube and being able to kind of seize the day around. Because radio in America is in such a sad state, because three corporations own basically 90% of the stations here in this country, and you're either in or you're out. You're either being, you know, played 18 times a day and people want to scream, or you can't get arrested, man. It's just such an either or. And I think that YouTube and internet radio, and certainly even this program here today, it kind of levels the playing field. It really does.
Well, that's it, isn't it? It's cyclical. It's exactly the same as it was in the 1950s and the 1960s. But what we've done is we have reinvented it, because thanks to technology, we've got a leg up for the independents. That's us. As opposed to pirate radio stations, which is what we had in the 60s to level the playing field, and FM. Now we have PCs, internet, and everything that goes along with podcasts and being prepared for the people that actually are serious contenders to do the research, because you've got to do the research. There's so much out there. I go to look and research somebody now. You know this, Rick. You know this, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If you really go at it for a couple of hours, it's amazing how much data there is available.
Mm-hmm. I'm always fascinated, and there's all these sources, and you're trying to check things. You know, people always bring Wikipedia into question, because a lot of times, you know, they will. It's just a fanboy or a fangirl who has written that person, you know, and then you know, 1865, Frank Sinatra invented the telephone, and you're like, wait, no, man, that didn't happen like that. Come on, man, come on. You know, and then that's why you have to. And I've seen that with a lot of artists who, you know, because, I mean, what happens, you know, and Roseanne and I were talking about this, you know, she's like, they try to censor out any signs.
Oh, that's what we had to talk about next.
Yeah. You know, she's like, they try to censor, you know, Roseanne always says they try to censor out any signs of intelligent life that I am. And she said, I got to a point where I was doing interviews with people, and they would call me and they would ask me all this philosophical and political views, and then they would print it and they'd say, oh, Roseanne is 5'3" and weighs 180 pounds. Her and her husband like to roll in the mud. And, you know, she got to a point where she'd say, listen, you know, some journalist would call her and she'd say, listen, I'm 5'3" and so many pounds, and the rest you can get from the back issues of the National Enquirer. So, and I think it's really interesting, too, how people take Donald Trump so seriously, but then Roseanne was considered a complete crackpot, you know. And, but if you sat down and read her platform when she ran for president in 2012, it all made sense, and it was all workable solutions, and it wasn't going to cost money. It was just common sense and changing your mind about things, you know. So,
right.
And she made a documentary. Hopefully it's going to be on Netflix soon. It was. I think it won some prizes here at the New York Film Festival about her presidential run. And here is a woman who is a multi-millionaire, and she can't get on the ballot. You know, I think she was on the ballot maybe in 5 states, and she was a write-in candidate in 12 states, and she still managed to come in 5th place, which is incredible.
Right.
It shows you, man.
It is. It's incredible.
People want a third party. People want something out of the side of, you know, of the same old, same old. And it's funny because I just reached out to her about maybe 5-6 years ago and wrote her a letter, and she's like, oh, my God, you're so funny. What are you doing? Who are you? And then she came, and when she wrote that book, Roseannearchy, I came to her signing, and I met her, and we've stayed in touch ever since. You know, hopefully in the future I'll be able to collaborate or work with her because I think she's a brilliant mind. And I believe that television show, Roseanne, was the last vestige of blue-collar America or a sitcom, you know, on a public network that was really about something. It was about the day-to-day struggles of blue-collar working people, you know. She's always had her finger on that pulse, you know. So
yeah,
I have a lot
I
of respect
agree.
For her, yeah. And, you know, she landed herself.
Everything you say, I underline and second that emotion. Absolutely.
Absolutely, Angie. Well, you're another
no,
goddess
I'm a huge
warrior,
fan.
Just like her.
A huge fan
yeah.
of Roseanne. Totally
yeah.
and utterly. I admire a big brain.
Yeah.
I like,
you know, it was
brains. You know, I
well,
just,
great minds, you know, it was really cool. I remember back in the 90s when she hosted Saturday Night Live, and D-Light were the musical guests. I'm like, this is perfect, man. Great minds think alike, because Lady Mathieu
right.
is like a modern-day Gloria Steinem, such a feminist, and that's another goddess warrior that we admire, you know. And to
right.
have those two women together, I'm hoping those two can get together and collaborate on something, because that would be it's just so needed, man. And we talk about patriarchy in this country and how it even men find it's even difficult for men to live under patriarchy, because there's these set of rules and everything. And I think that as we go into the Aquarian age, we're going to see a return to matriarchy and to the goddess, you know. I hope so.
Me too. When does the Aquarian
you know,
age start? Let me make plans. I need to put it in my schedule.
Well,
when
as Madge
does it
used
start?
To say on, I think it already started. So, I, you know, as Madge used to say on
oh,
Palm
good.
Olive, relax, you're soaking in it.
Oh, I'm marinating.
Exactly. Dishwashing liquid. Relax, you're soaking in it.
Oh, boy. Gosh.
Yeah, so
I remember you said on the phone when we were chatting, you mentioned Lady Keir and RuPaul and Madonna. So in that, the way that you put the three of them together
I
as,
mention, I mentioned
as
Madonna.
Media
I mentioned
power.
Madonna.
Pardon me?
I'm sorry. No, I keep going. I'm sorry. Keep going. What was the question?
No, I was going to say, I mean, as media powerhouses that those ladies are, what do you think about Madonna at the moment? I saw some great, I think it was either a video or a photo shoot maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago. And I thought, oh, good. So I see she's busy.
You know, I respect her game. I respect the fact that she's the only person, I think, from the class of 1982 who still has a recording contract, who's still out there in the stadiums, who's not, you know, doing a late-night infomercial, who still kept herself viable.
Right.
My kind of beef with Madonna is that I really wish she would do more than just lip service. I mean, it's great to get up and say, oh, I support women's rights, I support gay rights, I support all that. Okay, so, yeah, you know, we're in a capitalist society there, my lady, so what's going on? I mean, maybe she is doing a lot and is not publicizing it, but there's a woman who loves to wear the good guy badge and be in the media. So I don't know. I mean, I know all my friends went completely back over flips, and you know, at 55 years old, three stadium shows back to back to back, 2 days at the Garden and 1 day out there at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. I mean, she's still going. So that says a lot. That does say a lot about that. I wish that she were a little bit more hands-on in the, in that business of where finding ways to support. No matter what it is in this country, we need leaders, man. We need leaders. Anybody can get up and get and cash the check and take the money and give lip service, but we got to have leaders, man. Leaders who are actually affecting these changes. Who was it? Was it Gil Scott-Heron who said that the revolution will not be televised?
Tennessee, a lot of times the idea of being a role model is more enticing than the reality of living it.
Yes, absolutely. And, I mean, role models, you have to remember, I mean, you know, Moses never got to the promised land, but hey, he's still Moses, you know? So you don't look for perfection in these people. Just, you know, listen to their message and listen to what they're saying. And because sometimes you look to people, sometimes they got feet of clay. So even though they're trying to do their best, they're not perfect. We're all just human beings. So I think it's just more about the message than it is the messenger.
I think it's also a little more simplistic than that. I think it's like when we read biographies, for instance, whenever I get writer's block, I will go back and read Edgar Allan Poe biography or Oscar Wilde. And sometimes it's one sentence, it's one phrase, and it does it to you.
Yeah.
It goes, oh, yeah, okay, that's what I'll do. And I go back to find that hook.
That's the thing. That's the thing with the English language and or any language. It's getting those latchkey words in the right order where a huge gong goes off in everyone's head, and they'll say, oh, of course. And it can be done
right.
In one sentence because I mean, we have so many quotes, you know. We have so many quotes that gives inspiration and strength, and then that births forth life to a new reality.
Absolutely.
I'm really excited about what all's happening in America now. Gosh, I really hope Bernie Sanders can pull this off. I really do, man.
Me too.
He's and I'm hoping that he can stay independent. I don't know how in the world that could happen, but it would be so great to have just a third party, just to show America is ready for something else. Because I'm not saying that, you know, that our president hasn't done good things or that each party hasn't done some good things or other, but they're just celebrity spokesmodels for the pharmaceuticals and for the prison industrial. I mean, you know all of that. The prison industrial complex.
Well, I love President Obama. I just think President Obama is incredible. But I do know that the Democrats and the Republicans are old school, old style. And Bernie Sanders is new school, new style, because everyone here is too young to have actually been around long enough to have seen it when it came up in the 60s, and we all looked at what Bernie Sanders is talking about and said, yes, we want a society like that. We want a society where everyone has an equal opportunity, where all the kids are educated, and where life is going to be better than it was 10 years ago.
Absolutely. It's just a common sense thing. This is, you know, it's just like, I think, you know, a well-educated populace who is able to have access to health care is an excellent idea. I mean, you know, that will prevent all sorts of calamities from happening, which we're seeing more and more here in America. I just believe that I'm hoping, man, and I'm telling you, if there is some way that Donald Trump buys this thing or gets in power, I'm going to go back to Europe. I can't do that. You know, I left New York right after 9/11, and what's that?
Would you say goodbye to all our lovely audience?
Oh, yes. Thank you, Angie. And thank you, everyone out there listening. I'm hoping, God bless. It's so great to be on here today and be able to speak to you. And great to meet you as well. Thank you, everyone. Thank you.
Thanks for being on.
Go ahead, Rick. Please address our goodbye, everybody. It's been a wonderful show. And thank you so much, Tennessee. I always, you know, I melt for you. I love you so.
Likewise, you know, and Angie, you're beautiful, you know, what can I say?
Babes. Rick, thank you so much. Everything okay, guys? Are we cool? Are we good?
Oh, yeah. Thank you both.
All right.
Thanks,
yes,
everybody.
And I hope, yes, and you can go back and listen to this as a podcast, I'm hoping. I hope that this is available.
It's going to be perfect. It's going to be available in the next 15 minutes, sweetie.
Wonderful. So, yeah, if you're just tuning in, you can go back and catch it from the top of the hour. Wonderful.
Absolutely.
Thanks again, Angie. I'll see you down there in Atlanta soon.
All the links will be live in about 10 or 15 minutes.
Wonderful, wonderful. You guys have a blessed day out there. Seize the day.
You too.
You too, sweetheart. We love you.
Love you too, Angie. See you soon. Nice to meet you, Rick. Good afternoon,
nice
everybody.
Nice to meet you.